Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. Thanks, Eve. For those of you who aren't familiar with Help the Hospices, we're the national membership body for local hospices, representing 240 services and organisations around the UK that deliver the vast majority of hospice care. And contrary to popular misconceptions, hospice care isn't just about what happens in a building. The vast majority, almost 70% of the care that local hospices provide, is actually provided and supporting people in their own homes, in their usual place of residence, to use the current jargon, and getting the care to where people need it the most. And I think it's fair to say that you know, we can be rightly proud in this country of our hospice movement. It's where the modern movement began. We have over 50 years of experience of providing and developing services, grassroots organisations, locally owned, locally accountable, that are responding, have responded to the needs within their local communities. But the challenge is that we clearly need to do more. We know from the review report of the Palliative Care Funding Review that at least 92,000, if not a lot more, people each year die and have a need for palliative care support but don't receive it. So I think that we are at something of a crossroads, an important crossroads for hospice care and the way that we organise the care and support that hospices provide. The reality is hospices are very unlikely to ever have the capacity to care for everyone approaching the end of life or everyone affected by terminal illness. But we can look to do more to reach more people, to support more services and help improve the experience that more people have at the end of life, making sure that they're getting the compassion, the dignity and the respect that we would all want to see at the end of life. So from the perspective of hospice care, of organisations providing hospice care, right now feels like a bit of a perfect storm. There's so much change, there's so much increasing demand, as we know from all of the analysis of the way that our population is changing. Quite rightly, rising consumer expectations. We all expect more of our services, whether they're from the public, private or voluntary sectors. We've got the huge reform, the restructuring of the health and social care system, which I think is probably one of the biggest threats, one of the biggest challenges to maintaining that momentum and that focus that we've seen on improving palliative and end-of-life care over the last few years. So it's a challenge for us all to make sure that even while all of these changes and the structures are moving and the people are moving around, we all have to make sure that this stays as a priority. We're facing increasing regulatory burden, and I suspect after last week's report we may face even more regulation. And the challenge there is, how do we balance the need to regulate and monitor quality and improve quality with the flexibility, the capacity and the resourcefulness that we need to innovate and develop new services? And of course, NHS funding is under pressure. Even though the government would claim that they've protected NHS funding, we know that reality on the ground is that the amount of money that the NHS has got to deploy is far less than it was in previous years. The vast majority of the resource to provide, to develop and provide and sustain hospice care comes from the local communities that hospices serve, where over two-thirds of the resource comes from local communities. And not only are we facing that pressure on NHS funding, we're also facing an increasingly challenging fundraising environment. And of course, you know, this final point here is a bit of a double-edged sword. We've got changes to the way that services are being commissioned. We've got the potential for more competition in the marketplace, in the healthcare market as it develops, which of course is potentially a very good thing, because hopefully we'll see more organisations, more services developing and hopefully driving up the quality of care that people receive. But it does create a very different, challenging environment for local hospice services who perhaps don't always have the capacity, the expertise to be able to operate in that sort of environment. So the bottom line here is the challenge we're all facing, and the challenge we're facing as a hospice movement in particular, is how can we do more with less? How can we drive up the quality? How can we reach more people? How can we improve the experience that people have in wherever they may be cared for as they're approaching the end of life? How can we actually touch their lives and their deaths? A piece of work that I think was a real turning point, and if you haven't read it, I would strongly recommend a read. A piece of research undertaken by Demos, the think tank, in 2010, looked at this whole question of how do we transform, how can we restructure and redesign the way we care for people at the end of life, and proposed really quite a radical set of recommendations or suggestions for how we could take this forward. It presented some important opportunities for hospices and for other services, but equally identified major challenges for how we're going to move forward in the future, looking at things like how do we get more services closer to people's own homes? How can we reach more people with the expertise and the knowledge that we know exists within hospice and palliative care? How can we spread that knowledge more widely? As I say, I would certainly recommend a read if you haven't already done so. It's some very thought-provoking commentary, really, in there. As a response to that, a direct response to that report, and of course the changing environment in which we're working more generally, helped the hospices set up a commission looking at the future for hospice care. And I just wanted to briefly touch on what that commission has been tasked with doing. It's about highlighting, of course, the high quality of hospice care and looking at how can we promote and extend the expertise, the knowledge, to a wider pool of people who could benefit. It's about providing local hospices and hospice care services with a framework to be able to think about more strategically how they're going to prepare for the future and how they're going to deliver services and work in the future. Helping hospices to meet the challenges of all of the demographic change as well as the change that's going on within our health and care system more widely. And importantly, and I think to me this is the most important point, it's about helping hospices adapt and innovate so that hospices are well positioned to provide the very best care and to support others, other services, other users, other parts of their community to meet public need, to meet the rising expectations that we see. And of course it's about essentially helping hospices navigate this uncertain world to be better prepared, better positioned to take this work forward. In my mind I always come back to the point that our hospice movement began as a radical movement for social change. This was a classic example of a grassroots, locally driven response. It was communities responding to perceived gaps and perceived needs that they had and responding to that. And I think if we can recapture some of that radicalism that gave us the hospice movement in the first place, it will help us. It's a resource that can be drawn on to help support the whole healthcare system, health and care system, as we move forward into the future. So there are a number of work streams. I won't spend a huge amount of time on these, but just to give you a flavour of the work that the Commission is doing, looking at the unique offering, the USP of hospice care, if you like, quantifying the need for hospice and palliative care moving into the future, looking at the workforce, the skill mix, the capacity, the capability that we have within the hospice movement to prepare ourselves and equip ourselves with what we need to meet the future demands, identifying future funding opportunities, looking at new partnerships, looking at new approaches to care, new models of care, and importantly, looking at the future for hospice education and research. Now, the Commission itself isn't one of these commissions that disappears for a year or 18 months and then comes back with a big report that ends up sitting on a shelf. This Commission is very live, very open, and is producing working papers, discussion papers and resources as it goes. And I just wanted to very briefly touch on one that was published very recently in the last couple of weeks, which was commissioned from our colleagues at King's, looking at the future, the current and future needs for hospice care, looking at the evidence around demographic change and the changing nature of the population, and beginning to think about what those challenges mean in very practical terms. What are the service considerations? What are some of the questions we're going to need to be able to answer as we move forward? And I suspect the points here will be no surprise to many of you. There are many others in that report, and I would certainly encourage you to have a look at that. So I was going to just pull out some key considerations for what this brave new world, what these changing demands actually might mean for hospice care, and how hospices can best respond, or at least prepare to respond. You'll see some quotes from some reports that the Commission has produced over the last few months, just to illustrate the point here. I think the first point is about being proactive, and I think this quote from Greg Parston sums it up absolutely brilliantly, that this really isn't the time for complacency. Yes, we know that we have every right to be very proud in this country about what our hospice movement has developed and designed and provided over the years, but the world is moving very fast and changing very fast, and we need to be prepared as a health and care system, as a palliative care community, to change with it. And as I said earlier, we must remember that our roots began as a radical movement for social change, flexible, adaptive, and that's something that we really need to retain and sustain. Because it's about innovation and that flexibility, whether it's about responding to the changing demand, whether it's about reaching new groups of people who could stand to benefit from the support of hospice and palliative care services, and asking ourselves the very fundamental and difficult question of whether our models of care, whether the model of care that exists within hospice care is fit for the future. Is it the right set of services? Is it the right approach to meeting people's needs? How might we need to adapt our approach to meet the needs of different groups of people who need the support of expert services? And you'll see some of the suggestions there. And we have a history of this as a movement. If you look over the last 10 or 15 years, the massive expansion of hospice at home services in particular, this whole idea of taking the expertise out of the building and getting it into people's communities, and particularly into people's own homes, has completely transformed the way that hospices work. And we will face similar innovation and challenge and opportunity as we move forward, and we need to be open and responsive to that. Because, as I said at the beginning, hospices are unlikely to ever be the only solution to providing better care and support to people approaching the end of life, but we will always be part of the solution, whether it's about expertise, whether it's about advice and guidance, whether it's about simply getting alongside people who are affected by terminal illness. And one of the things, of course, that is part of the movement's unique selling point is the use of volunteers. Not only are our local hospices predominantly funded and supported and effectively commissioned by our local communities, but local people stay involved and engaged and part of the care that is being provided. There is an opportunity, I think, for us to use and think about creative ways of making better use of that enthusiasm and of that willingness for people to volunteer and to be engaged. So how else could volunteers be used? Whether it's about befriending, whether it's about that getting alongside of people and being a champion, an advocate, a guide through the system, whether it's about thinking creatively about how we can deploy volunteers in different ways in perhaps clinical settings. These are all things that I think are going to be absolutely crucial, absolutely central to the future of the hospice and palliative care community. I'm going to embarrass Peter, who's in the audience now, and pull up a quote that comes from him about really about this the future being about partnerships at a whole range of different levels. It's about the partnership with our communities, with the organisations and networks that exist within our communities. It's about partnerships with other services, whether that's care homes, whether that's domiciliary care agencies, whether that's hospitals. The only way that we're going to really make an impact and make a difference to the experience that people have at the end of life is by all working together. And that partnership message, I think, is absolutely critical, particularly as we help our commissioning colleagues think about how to configure services within those communities to deliver better outcomes and better quality. So whether it's about partnerships to deliver new services, partnerships to deliver expertise and education and training, partnerships to improve the research and knowledge base, you know, it's partnership which is absolutely key. So finally, what does the future look like? And this is a quote from someone I'm sure will be very familiar to you all, Dame Barbara Munro, the chief executive of St. Christopher's Hospice. The challenge that we're facing is enormous. It's not just a challenge which is relevant to local hospices, it's a challenge which is relevant to our entire health and care system. I think one of the points we need to protect, nurture, to develop, to spread is that, as Barbara says there, the founding values of compassionate communication, confident care, and community engagement. These are the things we know that make a difference to people's experience at the end of life. Well, these are the things that the reasons why people rate hospice care and the experience of receiving hospice care so highly. And the challenge for us as a whole healthcare system is how can we deploy that? How can we spread those principles to reach more people so that everyone has the very best experience possible at the end of life? Just finally, the commission final report will be published this autumn. So do keep an eye out for that and for the work coming through the system, and hopefully look forward to having an opportunity to come back and tell you more about the outcomes of that maybe in due course. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.